Welcome to the Untold Tales audio anthologies. Written by Dr. Jeffrey A. Robinson and Don Muchow, and narrated by Melissa Del Toro Schaffner. The Traveling Salesman, Part 14. I had just about settled myself around the idea of being marooned on a desert planet with a defective robot and a guard with severe self-image issues when Glactyl interrupted my rare moment of peace. "Hand me the saw shovel out of my bag," he said. "I've got..." "Please," I said. "Hand me that saw shovel, please." Glactyl made a pained facial expression. "Fine," he said. "Hand me that saw shovel, please." "No," I said. "Get it yourself. You've got two legs. I'm busy." Glactyl walked across the few steps separating us and retrieved a collapsible shovel with a nanofilament edge that could, with a little elbow grease, cut through stone. The low tunnel we were in was the sixth of several nondescript such areas that ran through the ruins of a once great civilization that had now mysteriously disappeared. In our seemingly pointless effort to locate one of Glactyl's elusive unitools, we had been shoveling rock for what seemed like days. "You had this all planned," I said through clenched teeth. "The city of Parvot, on the planet of Etrigan, it rolled right off your freaking tongue, like you knew where you were going." "I did know where I was going," said Glactyl, "just not when." "What I can't figure out," I said, standing up from my uncomfortable crouched position, "is why you'd pick here, and why, having picked here, you don't seem to know what chamber to look in. This all seems so half-baked for a guy who plans everything."
"I told you," said Glactyl. "The tunnels where I found several unitools, or will find several thousand years from now, were in the ruins of the Hloth Sulti civilization. I don't know exactly where, but I know they left them behind when they mysteriously left their home world. Maybe it was like forgetting socks in a drawer. I don't know. All I know is that they were in this area when I found them. I didn't think we would be looking for them again, or I'd have recorded their location. Nevertheless, I think there's a reasonably good chance we'll find them, and it was definitely a better gamble than being blown to bits." Glactyl put the saw shovel down and rested his thin, spindly hand atop my shoulder. "You seem upset," he said. "You deserve to be. I've made mistakes. I almost got us killed. I let you down." Sighing, I said, "No, Glactyl, I'm just tired. Really, really tired." Glactyl walked back over and put his hand on my shoulder. "I'm profoundly sorry," he said. "Not for everything. I am grateful for your friendship, indebted to your cleverness and ingenuity, and I've only begun to appreciate how truly different your perspective on things is as an Earthling. But for the trouble I have put you through, no words can suffice."
"If that was an apology," I said, "it was a pretty good one." As I picked at the edge of an outcropping in the subterranean stone with a tool, I noticed something artificial. Not that I had any idea what it might be. Just then, I heard, or rather felt, through the tool, a low-pitched humming that was distinctly different than anything I'd encountered during our search. "Okay, that's different," I said. Glactyl peered at the bit of stone I'd been working on. "What's different?" "That," I said, pointing at the rock outcropping. "When I touched it with this tool, the rock hummed."
"Hummed?"
"Yeah, somewhere between a vibration and a sound."
"Ah," said Glactyl, "I know what that is."
"You heard it?" Sometimes I forget that his anatomy was different and that he could hear high-pitched noises, much like a dog.
"What is it?" I asked. "It's a technoglyph," said Glactyl. "The Hloth Sulti used them as a sort of lock and key device. If you activate the glyph correctly, it often unlocks something. Several glyphs together make the possible combinations grow exponentially. It's not uncrackable, but difficult to crack, and definitely annoying. They used technoglyphs shortly before they abandoned this planet, and their legend began.
What legend?
I asked. That they had somehow discovered or invented something so profound that it allowed them to transcend their physical existence and roam the space between the spaces.
What the hell does that mean? I picked at the rock again, and it buzzed again.
No one knows, said Glactyl. That's why it's a legend. Some people think they fled to null space, but no one really knows.
I pressed the tool against another spot on the rock face. This time, the pitch of the buzzing was even higher.
Stop doing that, said Glactyl. You'll lock us out. I put the tool down.
Fine, I said. Have it your way.
Glactyl reached into his bag and removed some kind of device about the size of an old walkie-talkie, but wider. He started pressing buttons on the device's face. Eventually, one of the buttons glowed green. Miraculously, he said, you got the first three glyphs right. Now, let me look at what we have to do for the next six.
They aren't even visible, I said.
Glactyl continued typing furiously on the little keypad. Apparently, he said, unlocking the first three glyphs should open up some sort of panel revealing the other six. Glactyl reached across in front of me and to my right and grunted as he pulled at the edge of the stone. It didn't move. It's supposed to lift, said Glactyl as he pointed at one edge of the rock face. Right there. I picked my bag up off the rock shelf, reaching toward the edge, and it lifted quite easily.
You're such a wuss, I said. You didn't even try.
Glactyl frowned. My strong suit is cleverness, not strength. Our race's ancestors were arboreal lizard-like creatures who survived predation by sizing up trouble and moving quickly out of the way. Our civilization began when some distant relative learned to size up, not just predators, but cultural competitors, and outwit them. It's your ancestors that were small-brained, violent, muscle-bound monkeys.
Don't get me started, I snapped. I'm not in the mood.
The now exposed hidden countertop revealed a total of 9 shining lit glyphs. The 3 nearest to me on the right were glowing green.
Now what? I said.
Now we crack the code. Glactyl got out his walkie-talkie pad thingy and started typing. On Earth, I said, we just type in the easiest password the system would allow. That will never work, replied Glactyl, typing furiously on the little keypad.
Actually, Harold interrupted, the Holoth Zulti were obsessed with nulls and null space. I suggest rotating the remaining 6 glyphs to the null position.
Shut up, Harold, said Glactyl. It won't work, and you're just encouraging him.
Try it, I said.
With visible reluctance, Glactyl rotated the other 6 glyphs to the null position, just as I had done with the first 3. The entire row lit up green, and the top of the panel slid away, revealing 3 unitools. I cleared my throat audibly.
Ahem, you were saying?
Glactyl ignored me and reached for one of the unitools. As I reached for the second, he stopped me.
What? I don't get one? I said.
We can only take one, Glactyl explained. Because when I arrived last time, well in the future when I get here, there were only 2. I didn't know what these were at the time, and I only took one, leaving the other one here. Taking 2 might put some twist in the timeline that would prevent me from coming back and taking any of them. I want to avoid creating a paradox. There are too many ways that this could go north on us.
Go south, I corrected.
Why does it matter what direction you go? Asked Glactyl. It's such a stupid expression.
You need to learn English or get your translator recalibrated. But heck, it doesn't matter. We've got what we were looking for, so let's go.
Go where? Asked Glactal.
Home, I replied.
I just want to go home.
Glactal stood silently for the longest time. Then he nodded his head sadly and said,
I was afraid you might say that. You brought that up some time ago, but I didn't know if you were serious.
Well, I am, I said. I just can't take the stress anymore. First we make a fortune, then we lose it. Someone is always chasing us, and I can't count the number of times we've almost died. I can't sleep. I have nightmares where I can't stop looking over my shoulder. And frankly, I don't think it's just some kind of PTSD or whatever. I think I'm done adventuring for a while. I just want to go home.
Glactal thought for a while and finally said, So be it then.
Grabbing one of the unitools, he said,
I'll just take this and be going.
Where?
Well, we need to move elsewhere in time and space. We can time travel as a group, but only one of us can teleport at any time.
Then we're stuck here?
No, said Glactal. You're stuck here, but not for long.
What?
I'll be back, replied Glactal.
And with that, he was gone. I stood dumbfounded for what seemed like the longest time, though it was probably only about 10 minutes until Harold broke the silence.
I do not believe Mr. Glactal will return, he said, somewhat glumly. I believe we are going to die here.
Otto choked back a tear. He seemed to always be on the verge of doing that.
I'm grateful, he said quietly, for the mercy and kindness you have shown me, Mr. Bob.
We're not going to die here, Otto, I said. I refuse to. That would be giving up. All we need to do is figure out some way to signal for help and hope somebody notices.
But the men in black took our communication devices,
said Otto.
We're stuck.
Maybe not, I said. Harold, don't you have some kind of narrowband comms that you use to identify the location of chargers?
Yes, said Harold, but there are no chargers here. My battery will run down in approximately 10 days without recharging.
But in the meantime, I said, you could send a coded signal on that frequency, and if you were high up enough and outside atmospheric influence, you could send out a weak distress signal.
Technically, yes, said Harold. I can recalibrate, but to send a signal, I'd have to walk to the top of the nearest mountain, which is Mount Tleiloxu, approximately a week's journey from here. I would have only 3 days of power left to periodically send a distress signal.
But you'd have those 3 days, I said. Right?
Yes, sir, said Harold. That is correct. I could accelerate my progress to the mountain, but it would drain my battery faster. I could theoretically extend my power using the small 10-watt solar panel you hastily packed in your luggage, but it would not charge quickly, and it would add several days to my trip. I therefore should proceed cautiously and deliberately.
I understand, I said. Be careful, and come back if you reach anyone.
Yes, sir,
replied Harold. Farewell, Mr. Bob. I am off to save the day. May we meet again. Maybe it was the dusty air, but I felt like I had something in my eye, and Otto was tearing up too. Farewell, Harold, and good luck. If we get out of here alive, it will be because of you.
It was a pleasure to be of service, Harold said, and I got the sense he meant it.
Same here, buddy, I said, choking up. Now, get going before I lose it.
Lose what, sir? Harold inquired in his usual sing-song Teletubby kind of way.
Just get going, I said, before I ask you to stay.
Harold left without much ceremony, presumably to trek a solid week toward the top of Mount Tleiloxu.
I wondered if we'd ever hear from him again. Then it was down to the two of us.
Otto and I sat down on one of the stone ledges as I eyed the two remaining unitools. It would be so easy, I thought, and so wrong. Otto and I loitered for a few days. My hunger grew quite intense. I still wasn't quite ready to eat the emergency food bars I'd packed, but I was getting close. We stayed underground during the day because it was cooler than the desert surface above us. However, when it was cooler, we'd ventured out to get some fresh air. Besides, all that time underground was beginning to make me claustrophobic. After another day, I grew hungry enough that I looked around for a bar of food concentrate that I had tossed aside earlier, only to spot what looked like an oversized rat or ground squirrel, gnawing at the wrapper and tearing it open with its teeth. After making some progress with the wrapper, the rat, or whatever it was, dropped the packet and made a half-barking, half-hacking noise as it spit out the contents. I could have told him it was awful, I said, returning reluctantly to my dietary fast. Otto's gaze seemed transfixed on the location of the rat.
Shh,
he said, with some authority. What? I asked.
Be quiet,
said Otto, getting up slowly.
I think I hear something, but it's faint, and it's coming from just outside.
As I looked up to where Otto was pointing, I caught a glimpse of tiny flickers of light high in the sky, just beyond the edge of the tunnel mouth.
That,
said Otto, pointing in the direction of the lights,
is some kind of spaceship.
But that's impossible, I said. Harold wouldn't even be halfway to his destination yet. Besides, I doubt any signal he might have sent would even have had time to be received. Nevertheless, as I looked up, the lights I saw were consistent with the configuration of a moderately sized private craft of some sort. And lacking any better plan, Otto and I walked toward them, waving. Hey! I screamed. Over here! To my surprise, a voice rang out from the mysterious-looking, egg-shaped ship. Identify yourselves, it demanded. My name is Bob, I said. My partner here is Otto.
I'm your partner?
Otto asked hopefully.
Have I been promoted?
We're equals, I said. Always have been, and it's time you started believing it.
Partners,
Otto said, in a dreamy, faraway voice. Clearly, it meant something to him, and it felt good to acknowledge the inherent worth of a sensible, intelligent creature who was eternally grateful and not constantly trying to con everyone he met. Bob, the interstellar businessman and man of mystery? Replied the booming, disembodied voice. I don't know about all that, I said. I'm just Bob. But you're the Bob that caused the zombie apocalypse on Earth, right? Replied the voice. Technically, I said. That was Glactyl, and the apocalypse had to do with his mistreatment of cattle and the release of a prion plague on humanity. But yes, I'm that Bob. Good, said the voice. I'll bring you two on board and we can talk face to face. The spaceship lowered itself slowly to the ground, and a door opened on the side, revealing a short staircase leading up into the ship. Greetings, said a small, silver-clad figure, about the size of a 12 or 13-year-old human. As it looked around, it added, Jesus, what a hellhole! How did you end up here? It's a long story, I said, and one mostly I want to forget about. Right now, we just want to get off this planet. My name is Zorback, said the figure. Mr. Glactyl sent me. I've come to take you away from this and return you to Earth, as promised. And for the first time in a long while, I grinned. You had me at Earth. By the time we were on board, it had completely slipped my mind that Harold was still back on Etrigan. Wait! I said suddenly. We forgot Harold. No, said Zorback. We didn't forget him. He must continue his trek on foot to the summit of Mount Tlaloxu. Fuck destiny, I said. I paid for that robot. I want him back. And I'm not taking vague explanations from someone who won't even show his face. No, said the figure, this time more forcefully.
Mr. Glactal told me that Harold must be at the summit at the foreordained time, or the Lothzulti city of Parvat will not be created. And if it is not created, he will never find the artifact you found.
Why? I asked.
Well, he said that Harold would arrive at the mountain shortly after a spaceship crashes there, and that the only survivors would be children. But this has not happened yet. The robot will save the children, and they will grow up to found the city of Parvat, on top of the ruins where you were digging. They will consider him to be a grand wise savior, and will later worship him as a god.
Harold? I asked.
Our Harold? A god?
Yes, answered Zorbak.
I shook my head, recalling how the city of Rome had supposedly been founded when twin children, Romulus and Remus, were saved and raised by wolves. Intergalactic history was unpredictably weird and yet remarkably consistent. While history technically didn't repeat itself, it sure did seem to rhyme a lot.
Fine, I said petulantly. Glactal told you to take me back to Earth?
Yes, replied Zorbak. We can leave whenever you want.
That was that, I guess. Clean break. Put your past behind you, dump your friends.
Good, I replied after a few seconds. Let's go. I'm sick of this place.
For some time after, I continued to probe Zorbak for additional details about Glactal's plans, but Zorbak didn't say anything. Finally, I gave up, sat back, and dozed off for a while. When I awoke, our silver-suited friend announced,
"Okay, Bob, we're here."
Where's here?
Earth, replied Zorbak. This is where I drop you off.
As soon as I got out of the spaceship, I saw a sign that read, "Welcome to Texas." Either this was an elaborate ruse, or we really were back on Earth. It took me about 20 minutes to realize that the cars speeding by were all of a certain vintage, none of them more recent than the late 1960s.
The little shit, I thought. Can't get anything right. He dropped me off on Earth, all right, but years before anyone had landed on the moon. If I tried to explain how I'd gotten here, I'd be dismissed as some kind of nutcase caught up in UFO madness. It all wrapped up rather nicely, and no other than dyed-in-the-wool UFO nuts would believe a word of my story. Hell, I wouldn't have believed it if I hadn't lived it myself. Meanwhile, as I stood just outside El Paso at the dusty, wind-blown intersection of McNutt and Brickland, with a partner who looked like Chewbacca on a bad fur day, I took in the import of our situation for perhaps the first time.
We gotta figure out what to do with you, I said to Otto.
You stand out kinda like a sore thumb.
Otto looked at himself as if he didn't belong, and I knew I'd said the wrong thing.
This?
He replied.
I could shave.
He'd have to shave a hell of a lot more than his beard, I thought. But with enough plastic surgery, he could pass as someone who was just ugly rather than alien. Maybe there was a cut-rate surgeon in town who'd take questionable forms of payment, as long as they had tangible value. In the meantime, I'd have to pass Otto off as a carnival entertainer on vacation. From here on, I said to Otto, your name is Harry.
You're making fun of me, aren't you?
Said Otto.
I probably deserve it.
The two of us walked in silence for a while, until about 30 minutes later. A shoddy-looking Renault Dauphine pulled up, and a hippie-looking guy in rose-tinted glasses reached over to the passenger side and rolled down the window manually. I was shocked that anyone would pick us up. After all, Otto was just a big, furry, bear-looking guy. I, on the other hand, was dressed in 13th-century business attire, which was arguably weirder and more visually striking in West Texas.
Get in, said the driver. You're right on time.
On time for what? I asked.
You're Bob, right? Said the man. My buddy said you'd be arriving about now. I'll explain later. Get in.
Otto and I squeezed into the tiny, beaten-up-looking little clown car.
Your buddy?
A former Air Force medic, he said. We served in Da Nang together. He's really into radio and aliens. He started a pirate AM station in Amarillo. Sometimes, if the night is right, I can pick it up on shortwave. Anyway, he said he'd heard voices on the radio telling him to send me here, so, well, I drove out to meet you. And you're right on time. By the way, my name's Sam.
Well, thank you, Sam, I said. And in the interest of brevity and directness, friend Harry and I were just dropped off by a UFO and could really use your help getting to safety somewhere outside governmental interference.
I grok you, man. And I got you, man, said Sam.
Art expected as much. There's a town called Del City, about 100 miles east of El Paso. It's quiet. It has a little corner store and a pizza joint, but not much else. No one will find you there. And I got a place you can stay until Art catches up with us and fills you in on the details.
Why did that name ring a bell? I wondered.
Art's got a concept for a nationwide radio show he's been working on, Sam explained. And I'm sure he'll want to have you as guests.
It was only later that I realized Sam's buddy was Art Bell. He would indeed host a radio show in a few years called Coast to Coast AM, and he'd become somewhat famous for it. The show would focus on the paranormal, UFOs, and other weirdness that happened out on the fringes of society. It would develop quite a cult following. But none of that had happened yet.
Your friend, I said to Sam, is there any chance we could connect sooner? I'd really like to talk to him. Maybe he could put us in touch with some other folks I'd really like to talk to. Could you make that happen?
Sam nodded.
Far out, he said,
which I took to mean yes. Art arrived a few days later and we met for pizza. I explained that Otto and I are from roughly 60 years in the future, and that I'd originally been picked up on a highway outside Houston by an alien named Glactyl, who had been sort of a con man and got me in a lot of trouble. I explained that Otto, or rather Harry, had been a guard at the prison where Glactyl and I were held, but we escaped, only to be conned again by a cat lady and marooned on a desert planet that was the homeworld to a race called the Loth Zulti. Glactyl had tried to get us out of trouble using a time travel device, which was illegal. And that's why we were banished and picked up by a different alien who dropped us off again on Earth 60 years before I'd left. And now, Otto and I were trying to get back to 2023 so we can get on with our lives, except that Otto was really from a bear-like race, so getting him to blend in would be a problem. Art listened intently, at first with an air of suspicion, then with interest. He scribbled notes as I talked, but eventually, having dumped the bulk of our adventures in his lap, I stopped talking.
I know some people, said Bell. I'll get you connected.
Far out, Sam repeated.
He took the longest time to devour the single slice of pizza he was holding, then finally spoke.
I believe you, he said. I do. I really do. But you're not as bad off as you seem. If you're from 2023, then you know what's going to happen, so you can make bets and pile up the money. A little at a time, of course, but in a few years, you'll have resources. And with the resources, you can do a lot. Change the world, even.
For all his hippie-sounding mumbo-jumbo, Art's advice made sense.
We're not trying to save the world, I said. Just get home.
And that was exactly how Otto and I spent the next few decades,
trying not to change the world too much and trying to get home. Even so, we accidentally managed to change a few things, just nothing anyone would notice.
The years went by, and as Sam and Art had predicted, a few well-placed bets helped Otto and me earn our way into positions of quiet influence. A few years after carefully playing the stock market, we decided to go bigger and take more risks. In 1975, I helped bankroll a young filmmaker named George Lucas. And a year later, I put some seed money into a small Los Altos, California company called Apple. Both turned out to be good bets, and by 1980, Otto and I had quietly built a small fortune that continued to grow. Then things went south with Art and Sam.
Otto and I put our money into a little venture capital company called InQtel. I knew nothing about them except the fact that they had relationships with the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, or DARPA, which we needed to get access to some of the tech we'd need to return home to our own time. I figured InQtel was the best and most direct way to accomplish that. Nevertheless, it was a gamble, since unlike Lucasfilm and Apple, I didn't know who InQtel was. Art didn't approve of our getting involved in government projects. He saw the government as the enemy, and he was too incensed to tell us himself. I learned from Sam that InQtel was the investment arm of the CIA, but by then it was too late to do anything about it. Our investment took off. Otto and I settled into a fairly plush neighborhood just outside of Houston. It seemed appropriate, since when this whole get-up started, I'd been on my way to a job interview, not far from here. Meanwhile, we set up our own investment groups and doubled down on promising cutting-edge technologies I felt might have some applicability to getting home. I was a little surprised that I didn't remember who the interview had been with, only that they were looking for enterprising individuals with an open mind and a certain degree of moral flexibility. It struck me in retrospect that it was just possible I'd been on the way to interview with my own organization. No matter what I tried, I kept finding myself falling back into the sort of clever business plays that would have made Glactal smile. Throughout the years, without much effort, Otto and I founded our own clandestine network of alien-connected tech companies, and we were starting to look a lot like the guys we'd been running from. After the falling out, Art never talked to me again, but Sam stayed in touch and came by periodically. Then Art died in 2018, and I was sad I hadn't had the chance to say goodbye. The guy was a visionary, poorly understood, and way more insightful about a lot of things that anyone had a right to know. In the meantime, Otto and I sat on our collected wealth and tried to enjoy life. I was grateful that Glactal had encouraged me to have longevity treatments when we'd traveled to the future. But there were times during the last 60 years when I found myself wishing I'd gotten old, and not just older. No one had the right to the kind of luck I'd had over the years, and I felt out of place, like I didn't belong here, on a plush balcony in one of the richest enclaves in the oil belt. Moreover, I knew what was going to happen, and sometimes it paralyzed me. I couldn't warn anyone at the World Trade Center about what happened on that fateful day in 2001. I couldn't tell anyone about the pandemic of 2020. The best I could do was back a few pharma outfits and hope people took health risks seriously. And I didn't want to live through the zombie apocalypse again. It was also approaching the time that I had originally met Glactal. Would history repeat itself? And if it didn't, had we changed it? And if we had changed history, hadn't we broken the very rules we'd been warned not to break? It was thus, with some surprise, that one joyfully warm August evening in Houston in 2023, as Otto and I lounged on the 11th floor balcony of our penthouse in River Oaks, I looked up from my whiskey and spotted a familiar egg-shaped spaceship hovering silently directly above the patio. Sobek, I thought. That little silver-suited squirt. If I ever get the chance to rip off that stupid helmet and see who was behind. My musings, however, were interrupted when a figure teleported from the ship to my patio. It was a humanoid, dressed entirely in black, all the way down to his eye coverings. Thorndike? I said. Stop fucking with the quantum teleporter and get back to work. Who's Thorndike? Said the figure. Oh, shit, I thought. The men in black. They found me. Can't those fuckers leave me alone? Wait, I began. I can explain. I had to make a living. I'll sell it all, I swear. Just please don't drop me off on some godforsaken rock that hasn't seen anything more intelligent than a rat for 50,000 years. Is this any way to greet an old friend? Said a familiar voice from behind the black mask and goggles. It was then I realized it wasn't the little guy who'd dropped us off decades before. It wasn't Thorndike, and it wasn't an MIB either. It was Glactal. Son of a bitch, I thought. Now you show your face, after 60 years!
Glactol clicked a button on the device in his hand, and the holographic illusion of an MIB vanished. I marveled for a moment.
You know I can read your thoughts, he said, tapping his head. New tech, from my guys.
But it was still Glactol.
I apologize, he said, for everything. But I'm hoping you'll hear me out. You see, the Time Corps needs you.
What? The men in black? I asked. I thought they were your enemies. What changed?
Everything, said Glactol.
It turns out they have their own internal squabbles, and there are several factions that disagree with one another. I connected with several of them and struck a deal. It seems they had a dilemma that they cannot figure out how to fix, so I told them that I could handle it if we came to an agreement. I was just looking to keep them off my back about time travel, but apparently things are rougher at the Time Corps than I thought. To my surprise, they appointed me as their interim leader.
Interim? I asked.
Yes, well, you see, it's contingent upon solving their problem. Normally, it would be fairly easy to fix, and they have a lot of rules. But before we get to that, our success depends on what you say next. Will you join me?
That depends, I said. In case you hadn't noticed, I have my own deep state conspiracy thing to run. We run around telling people made-up stuff like aliens aren't real and we're from the government and here to help. I hadn't intended for this to turn out that way, but there you have it.
You're the genesis of the MIB program? Ha ha! Glactol heartily patted my back.
That's hilarious.
I didn't think it was hilarious. It was a way to make a living, and one I was uniquely qualified to perform. Moreover, I wasn't sure if I liked Glactol's attitude at first. So much had gone on between us, and not all of it was good. In my opinion, a lot remained to be seen. A lot.
Take your time, Glactol said, as he sat down on the edge of one of the closest chaise loungers on a large roof patio.
I know I've taken mine.
I've had 60 years to think about it, I said. And I have my own conditions. First, I get to keep my network. Second, I get to stay in control of what Earth knows about people like you. Them. Us. I don't like what little hope we have shot to hell. And third, you don't dick around with our future.
Done, said Glactol. Anything else?
Yes. I want my own Unitool.
No problem.
And lastly, I want a pony.
What? Replied Glactol. What would you do with a pony?
It's just a figure of speech, I said. It means I'd ask for more if I could think about it, but I can't right now. Then I grew silent and my eyes suddenly grew moist with emotion. I've missed you, Glactol, I said. As much as I hate to say it, I've missed you.
Glactol put an arm around my shoulder. It actually was him and not a projection.
I've missed you too, old friend, he replied. And by the way, Harold sent you his regards. I recently visited him on a trip to the past, where he was a few thousand years ago. You should know that he managed to save those shipwrecked children on that mountain. By the way, no one ever heard his distress signal, so he took care of them until they built their own society. They revered him until he finally wore out centuries later. He died a real hero.
Shaking my head, I muttered, Unbelievable. That idiot robot. A hero.
And who is this? Asked Glactol. He looks vaguely familiar.
Oh, that's Otto, I replied. You remember him. He's been a tremendously trustworthy partner for the last 6 decades. But he shaved.
Squinting, Glactol said, I wouldn't have recognized him.
Well,
There were also a lot of surgeries before he could pass as a human.
Otto smiled and thrust his hand out.
Welcome back, Mr. Glactyl.
They shook hands, and then Glactyl said,
Well, you and I and Otto are free to go wherever and whenever we want.
And where do you suggest? I asked.
Ah, replied Glactyl,
I have a plan.
And with that, the three of us dematerialized and, for the last time, left Earth.
Thank you for listening. We love our listeners, fans, patrons, and supporters. We'd like to hear from you and let us know what you think. The best way to do that is to subscribe on our website, untold-tales.com. We want to make sure that we are creating stories and an experience that you're enjoying. So subscribe on our website. That'll put you on our email list. Again, thank you for listening and have a wonderful day.